Disconnect.
Yeah, now we'd be
good morning and welcome to another edition of Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm Richard Rutledge.
And I'm Ryan Smithy.
And thanks again for joining us this Monday morning as we continue through the New Testament, the Old Testament in 2017. We were able to go through the New Testament in 2016, and so now we're trying to go through this study. It's a little more difficult, I think, Ryan, for us to focus in on this, because last year we were able to go chapter by chapter.
Right.
This year we're going to have to go and do it from the standpoint of topical, in a way. And so it has been a little more difficult as far as things go that way. Now, this morning, we're going to turn our attention to Moses at Sinai. And as we get there at Moses at Sinai, we're going to focus in on mostly the Decalogue. We'll see a lot about that in that time period. But that's what our thought will be today. Before we get things going, if we can get things going a little bit, we had a little technical difficulty there just a moment ago. But we have a few things on the bulletin board. This Saturday, ladies, you're going to have an opportunity at the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ there in Bossier City, Louisiana, to take part in a workshop. Now, this workshop, I've heard good things about Tia McWhorter and April Meacham. You know, as they've done these things, ladies come back, they're excited because they've gotten a lot of good things. Well, they're going to be conducting this workshop Saturday, February 11th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and that's there at 5661 Shed Road in Bossier City, Louisiana. They're going to be bringing a lot of material, showing and demonstrating material. They're also going to be bringing resources that are going to be available for purchase. I'm sure they're going to be bringing things from the bookstore that they own and have that as well. But they do ask that you RSVP, or you can call the same number just to get some information, and that is 318-741-3016.
All right. And also coming up March 12th through the 19th, I want you to mark your calendar for a Young Men's Development Conference. This is going to be held at the BCS Church of Christ in College Station. And perhaps you've heard us mention it here. Also, Rick Popejoy on Reflections in the afternoon is helping put that together. And certainly invite you to visit the website at bcschurchofchrist.com. They're wanting you to go there and register, focusing on young men from the ages of 18 to 25, but certainly not limiting to that age. And so they are asking you to register so they'll know who is coming. But this is going to be a full week of about 6 days, 7 days there of some very full days of training and looking at Bible study, looking about worship, looking about living the Christian lifestyle, about teaching. And so knowing and living and teaching God's Word. And so I know it'll be a great week. We're looking forward to it, and certainly hope that you will investigate it and tell others as well.
All right, then right around the corner is the 51st Annual Memphis School of Preaching Lectureship. That's going to take place on March the 26th, go through March the 30th. Theme this year is Build Your Hopes on Things Eternal. They've got a good lineup of lessons throughout the week and speakers. I know that there will be a great benefit from this, and I know they'd love to see you there. So if you have an opportunity, make it out to Memphis. You can get information at msop.org or give them a call, 901-751-2242. And that's all we have on the bulletin board this morning. If you know of something that we haven't been mentioning, shoot us an email at mornings@tgrn.org, mornings@tgrn.org, and we'll do our very best to get it on the air in a timely manner so that folks will be aware of the event before it happens. But that's all we have. Well, this morning, we are going to turn our attention, as I said, to Moses at the encampment at Sinai. While they're there, we're going to start out there. Our text that we are looking in carries us from chapter 19 to chapter 24 in those in the scripture. And because at the beginning in chapter 19, we get him, get them to the mountain and on the mountain. And then chapter 24 ends with telling us how long he remains on the mountain. So we're going to be looking at some things. The highlight that we'll find in the middle is chapter 20 and then the various laws that follow. And so that's where we're going to be this morning. But we're going to take just a brief break before we get started. Stay with us, and we'll be back. Morning and welcome back to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. And once again, we thank you for being with us. Ryan has the chat box up and open, and we would love for you to join in with us if you have any comments, questions along the way.
We've got Chris and Miss Ann in today, and certainly welcome you and hope others maybe will join us there as well.
Yeah, that is great. It was good to see Miss Ann this weekend as we had a great time at the Make Me a Servant workshop this weekend, and having the fellowship of all the brethren that were coming in as well during that time. And I know that I was uplifted by it. The idea of we had the theme of rekindling our fire, and I hope that it did that for a lot of folks. Put some zeal back into us and help us to refocus on some of the things that we need to be focusing on.
You might add there, if you'll visit the on-demand page, those lessons, half of them have been added. The lady sessions will be added today. All of the men's sessions and the youth session is already up.
Okay.
And so visit there, and maybe you want to re-listen to something, or weren't able to join us, you can catch those there.
Or even share it with your friends. Mm-hmm. Let them know about what they missed so that they can make plans to be here next year. Well, let's turn our attention to our text this morning, and we're just going to look at a few things here in chapter 19 because it really sets the stage for the things that happen afterwards. You know, Moses and the children of Israel have now been delivered out of Egypt and have crossed over the Red Sea. And it tells us that chapter 19 begins, and it says, in the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, that these events take place. And they have set up camp now at the foot of the mountain. They've camped there in the wilderness of Sinai, in the mountain of Sinai. And they are there, and this is when it tells us in verse number 3 that Moses went up to God, and the Lord called him from the mountain, saying, now here's what he is to do. Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I have done to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my commandments, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. So it's there at Mount Sinai now that Moses has gotten and received these instructions from God. He tells them that it was he is the one. You've seen what I've done in the land of Egypt. You saw what I done, what had happened to the soldiers and the army as they pursued you through the Red Sea. And you have witnessed all these things, and it was I who delivered you out of this. And he says, I've carried you as even on eagle's wings. Now, in the second telling in Deuteronomy 32:9-12, this is recounted as well there. But the picture that I see is even that which is Isaiah 40 and verse 31. A hint of that even when he says, But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength, and they shall mount up with wings as eagles. And they shall run, and they shall not be weary, and they shall walk, and they shall not faint. And so he says, I carried you this way. But here's the if-then statement. If you will obey my voice and keep my commandments, then here's the benefit. Mm-hmm. You're going to be, to me, a special treasure. You're going to be, to me, a people above all people. You're going to be a kingdom of priests, and you're going to be a holy nation. Well, I mean, this is what Peter reminds us of as New Testament Christians. You look in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse number 5, we are that house, those lively stones, in offering up spiritual sacrifice that priesthood would. But in chapter 2 and verse 9, he says, you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praise of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So this is what he was calling the children of Israel at that time, and now Christians become that special people as well, that priesthood, that nation, and the peculiar people. But God has spoken these things, and so then Moses came and called the people together, the elders together, and he told them what God told him to tell them. There's this conversation that takes place, this dialogue that takes place between the children of Israel and God through Moses. God tells Moses, and Moses tells the people. The people say to Moses, and Moses tells God. And so he tells them this, and it tells us in verse number 8, and all the people, or all that the Lord has spoken, we will do. That's what they say. We're going to do this. So then he goes back and he tells God this. And then God tells Moses that I will come to you in a thick cloud that the people may hear when I speak to you and believe forever. Mm-hmm. Now, they're going to be granted the ability to know that God is speaking with Moses and to Moses in this way.
Chris brings up a point or a question maybe here even on verse 8 and asking, maybe a question here, you know, are they unintentionally even lying to God? Because very shortly they're not going to do all that the people are going to, all that the Lord is going to say unto them. And I think also brings out the point here, does that not speak to us about our vows? You know, here they were promising to walk with God and would fall short of that. And certainly there's a warning in that to us. Not to be like that.
Exactly. You know, what comes to mind with me is even the idea, you know, when Jesus talked about, you know, if a man's going to war, he's going to see if he can overcome. You know, the idea of counting the cost.
Right.
And, you know, there are many who would come to Jesus and say, I'll follow you.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know what that means.
Right.
You know, what does that then mean? And so what was that going to entail for the children of Israel, and were they really ready for that commitment? Mm-hmm. Did they understand what that commitment meant?
Right.
And so it is, like he said, there is the caution of vow. You know, somebody said, will you make me a promise?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, will you do something for me? Well, I mean, you know, the idea is I need to understand what I'm getting into and what I'm saying that I'll do. Mm-hmm. And here they do make this say, oh, yeah, we're going to do whatever he says. Now, that may have been of the best intentions.
Right.
A sincere heart spoke those things, but was not willing to go the final miles of that.
Right.
And so they say they're going to do it. And then God says, well, I'm going to speak to you. We're the people here, but the people are going to have to get ready.
Mm-hmm.
And always, you know, when I looked at these events that happened here in Exodus 19, he tells them, he says, tell the people to consecrate them today and tomorrow and let them wash their clothes and let them get ready. And they were going to set bounds and so that no one could come up there, even to the point where they were going to refrain from sexual contact from their spouses. Verses 14 and 15, the washing of the clothes, and it says, and he said to the people, be ready the third day and do not come near your wives. And so there was this idea of preparing to meet God. It was not, you know, it's not a casual thing to come before a holy God. And so there was preparation that was made. And, you know, with me and the idea of it, you know, when we come to worship God upon the first day of the week, it's not a last minute thought.
Right.
You know, as even just one aspect of our worship, when we're giving, he says that as a man's purposed in his heart, there's preparation, there's forethought in order to prepare the mind and prepare for that, the sacrifice for that worship. There was preparation. And it's not something that's just flippant, but something that is done with great forethought.
And how often throughout the Bible that idea of service is going to come back to, we need to recognize the holiness of God.
Mm-hmm.
God did it with Moses in the burning bush. He does it here with the people, impressing upon them his holiness as one worthy to be honored and served. We see it with Ezekiel and that throne room vision. We see it in the book of Revelation. That idea that here is the holiness of God that ought to challenge us to be the people he wants us to be.
And with it, you know, I mean, the idea... Sometimes we look at this and you think about the idea of what we present, how we present ourselves, okay, mm-hmm. what we wear. It's not required to wear a three-piece suit to worship
right.
God, you know. But, you know, our attire as well and our lack of preparation can say much about the heart is not prepared as well.
Right.
You know, it's not the fact that you have to do that. In, you know, I wear a suit, mm-hmm. you know, almost every Sunday. I don't know, you know, Wednesdays and things. You know, it's just it's a mindset of preparation, and so we're dealing with that. We're dealing with the fact, okay, you're washing your clothes, you're thinking about this for 3 days, and you're refraining from doing things. So they understood this at that point of time. God has made them do that, and so. You know, this takes place. The preparation is there, and then God appears in this rumbling fire and smoke and that is there, and the people are afraid to some degree. But also, you know, God tells Moses, he says, go down and warn them people. Don't let them break through. And Moses says, you told us to set up barriers so they couldn't, and they can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we made preparations for that. And so... He told him then to go ahead and go down and he could come up. And he told him to bring Aaron with him at this time. And so he goes back. Well, then God speaks these 10 words. And when we look at these 10 words of protection is what it, at times it's been called, those 10 commandments that were given. And when we look at these, just a few things that I want us to know. We're going to go through here, and you know, a lot of people focus on, and you know, they were an important part of, but they were not the complete law.
Right.
You know, I mean, when we look at the Ten Commandments, there were so many other, and even right here in this section that we're looking at, when we look at chapter 21 and 22 and 23, there's going to be even more that follow laws that God had given. But these first ten words, the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, the 10 words of protection. And we think of them, here's a way we could talk about protection. I don't know, brother had come up with this at one time, but number one was the first commandment is the protection from false gods, protection from false worship, protection from misusing God's name, protection of rest and remembrance of creation, protection of parents, protection of human life, protection of marriage, protection of property, protection of truth, and protection from evil desires. Well, let's notice some of these and see how that plays out. The first one is that first word that is spoken is there in verses 2 and 3.
I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me.
So here, you know, basically, let's begin where laying the foundation and start where things need to start. Put first things first, God. And this is where it all begins. I am the Lord your God. I'm the one who brought you out of the land of Egypt. I'm the one who brought you out of the house of bondage. And therefore, you shall not have another God. There's not going to be one in addition to me. There's not going to be one above me. There's not going to be one below me. Mm-hmm. It is the idea there's not going to be another. You know, here it says before me. You know, there's not going to be another at all. Mm-hmm. You cannot serve two gods. You know, Matthew 6 and verse 24, you know, the idea that you can't serve God and mammon. You're either going to serve one and love that one, and you're going to despise the other one. So he puts this forth here in the very beginning, and he says, why? Because, and, you know, this is what Paul tells the Christians mm-hmm. as well. You have been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body which and your spirit, which is his. In other words, there is the purchase. And he tells the elders of Ephesus in Acts chapter 20, mm-hmm. you know, to take heed to themselves and to feed the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood. In other words, here's the reason why. I bought you. I redeemed you. And therefore, all of those gods that surrounded you that I have overcome and showed that were around you in the land of Egypt, in the land where you dwelled, they are no more. And remember, they brought people, you know, as well with them, those strangers who would follow.
It seems odd to us maybe that one needs to be there, but it did, because that's really where they're going to begin faltering at mm-hmm. first. You are the generation that saw the parting of the Red Sea, the death of the Egyptian army. As you go forward, all the providing that God would do for them in the wilderness, and yet you still wonder whether God can give you the land of Canaan, whether he can really deliver his promises. And they needed to remember the mighty hand of God that had provided for them, had protected them, and would continue to.
You know, remember, Paul speaks about the idea that evil companionship corrupts good habits. And, you know, I think maybe we can see some of that. I mean, here they are now. You know, at the end of the book of Genesis, we find Israel, because Joseph, you know, is there in Egypt. They are all now moving into the land of Goshen, and they're in the land of pagans. And by the time the book of Exodus opens, we find that it has drastically changed. They had grown and multiplied so much, but now they've been put under bondage. And they're living in the shadow of all of these things, these false gods. They're going to be influenced by the things around them. And there's going to take a time of, and I think that's what we really see in this, in the 40 years that will follow, in this 40 years of wilderness wandering, is 40 years of overcoming 400 years mm-hmm. of indoctrination and chipping away at understanding who God is and trusting God, that this next generation is going to have to learn. Mm-hmm. But here he starts with this, and he reminds them of this. But then the second thing, not only is it the idea that there's not going to be another, but then it deals with the worship. Mm-hmm. And notice verses 4 through 6.
You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments.
All right. So now, when we look at this, you know, we're dealing with the worship and these graven images. And again, we go back into Egypt, and Egypt was covered up with all sorts of things that they had carved and overlaid with gold, and the imageries and things of their idols are everywhere. And he says, you're not going to build such things. You're not going to have such things. And with that, you're not making an image of anything, not even an image of trying to make an image of God. How can you create an image of an invisible God to begin with? But, you know, here's what he is warning against, and man was prone to do it. We have this idea at times that, you know, we need the tangible in order to see. And the Bible deals with it in many different places. You know, in the Old Testament, we're here talking about the idea that, you know, what you take a log, the man takes a log and he the craftsman carves this thing out, and then he sets it up, and he said, this is the man created this, and then he says, this is what created me. And he says, how absurd can that be? We see when Elijah is there in the prophets of Baal, and he says, call to your God. Is he asleep? Is he on the trip? You know, where is he? And he couldn't do anything. But when we get to the New Testament, Paul reminds us of similar events and how all those things came to pass. Look at Romans chapter 1, beginning there in verse number 20. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his internal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. But because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and they changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into the image into the image made like corruptible man, to birds and to four-footed beasts and to creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. Now listen, you know, all of that happened. The fact is that these people, they knew God, and then they didn't like to retain him in their minds. Why? Because you know what? God holds you in check. You know, if you're sitting there, you know, in the Word of God, if I'm going to continue in the Word of God, well, I'm going to be corrected and rebuked by the Word of God. And they didn't like that. They didn't like to retain God in their minds. And so what did they do? Their foolish hearts was darkened, and then they professed themselves to be wise. They were the standard. They were the authority in it all, and they became fools. And then they changed. They changed, and they started worshiping bugs, and they started worshiping bulls, and they started worshiping everything else. And then till finally, they then, notice what it says in verse 25, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and they worshiped and served the creature, the created, more than the creator. And, you know, this is what he's warning them against. Was this idea of not falling into that. Not all worship is acceptable to God. Go ahead.
I was about to say, and that's the idea throughout time. It's man wants to make God in his image because he can make him what he wants to be, what he's comfortable with. And God is trying to press upon them, I've made you in my image to follow after me. So.
Right. And that, you know, we want to, and a lot of people, I think, have done this very thing, even in the religious world today. You know, they, instead of trying to get themselves in the image of God, they want to turn God into their image. And so, you know, when you start bringing God down, then you're no longer worshiping God. You're worshiping your idol, this thing that you have created in your mind that you're calling God.
Right.
And therefore, the worship Jesus said there is a such thing as vain worship. Matthew chapter 15 and verse number 9, for in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. The worship that God desires, Jesus told the woman at the well. Mm-hmm. You know, when she's asking a question, in this mountain or this mountain? And he says, you know what? There's going to come a time when it doesn't matter if it's that mountain or that mountain, but it's going to be the fact. He says, the hour comes and now is when true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. God is concerned about the manner in which we worship him. And so we see, first is the dealing with God himself. Second is dealing with the worship of God. And then let's notice the third in verse number 7.
You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain.
All right. Now, you know, this dealing with even the name of God and how we use it. Sometimes when we talk about, taking the name of God in vain, people just think it's when you add an expletive to it that is now used vainly. But when we think about what the word vain means, it literally means void, empty, or without value. And so when I flippantly throw it around, when I use it in a manner that it does not show the reverence due God's name, I then use it in vain. If I use God's name to back up a lie, if I use God's name in an idle or flippant manner, irreverent manner, and of course, if I use it in a way that is blasphemous and in such a way. So he deals with that, the cautioning. We, you know, these first ones were dealing with man's interaction with God. But now we keep going, and we see once again, God is now going to address some things with man in verses 8 through 11.
Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it.
You know, now when we look at this and the idea of rest, it goes all the way back to and points to the creation. Now, the creation, we talked about this when we were in the book of Genesis there in the very beginning. We talked about these things in the literal 24-hour days. And this is what God speaks of right here as he speaks to Moses. He's talking about the creation. Again, we talked about, you know, if you're going to take Genesis chapter 1 through 11 and throw it out and call it mythological or call it, you know, this just this myth that takes place, well, God's referring back to it right here. That affects even the Sabbath. It affects the Ten Commandments. It affects the law of God. It affects so many things. And God said that it was literally 24-hour days, and you get one 24-hour day a week. And it was the Sabbath day. You're going to hallow it, and you're going to remember it. And so God has given the reason why that would take place and why are pointing back to the creation. Now, again, let's take the idea back over to the New Testament when we think about that Sabbath. You know, they worshiped on the Sabbath. They rested on the Sabbath. But, you know, a lot of people will say, well, Sunday's the, you know, the Christian Sabbath. Well, it's not. I mean, Sabbath means seventh day, and it's the seventh day. It's not. You know, Christians worship upon the first day of the week. And when we look at Christianity, so many important things happened upon that first day of the week. You know, the resurrection, the establishment of the church in Acts chapter 2, and worship. And here they are talking about the Sabbath day and remembering it and keeping it holy. Now he deals with the interaction with parents, in verse number 12.
Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you.
All right, here, now, Paul points back to this in Ephesians, in Colossians. The idea that it is the first commandment with promise. And here he is addressed on there. Honor your father and mother. But what does it mean to honor the father and mother? Hmm. It means more than just to, treat them with respect, but it includes respect.
Mm-hmm.
Leviticus 19, verse 3, every one of you shall revere his mother and his father. Keep my Sabbath. I am the Lord your God. So this reverence and respect that is shown to the parent, but it also means obedience. When you look at this idea of honor, it includes the idea of obeying your parents. Paul said in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord. But obedience was required,
mm-hmm.
and it actually carried a pretty stiff penalty
right.
if it wasn't obeyed. Deuteronomy chapter 21, 18 to 21, it's there that it speaks about the rebellious son. And if a man has this rebellious son who cannot be corrected, then he's going to be taken outside the city gates and stoned. And so, yes, honor is respect and obedience. It's the idea, that a man's not going to strike
mm-hmm.
his parent or curse his parent. We look at Exodus 21 and verse 15, one of the many other laws that are death penalty laws, that one would be. Exodus 21, 15, he that smites his father or his mother shall surely be put to death.
Mm-hmm.
And so this honoring in the way that we speak to them, and the way that we respect them, the way that we obey them. But then it's even broader than that as well. Because honoring does not end when we get out of the house. In this idea is also the idea of caring for them in their old age. In Mark chapter 7, Jesus speaking there, he says, for Moses said, honor your father and your mother, and whosoever curses his father and his mother, let him be put to death, referring to these that we were speaking of just a moment ago. But you say, if a man shall say to his father or his mother, it is Corban, that is to say, a gift by whatever you may be profited by me, then he is free, and you shall suffer him no more to do aught for his mother and his father, or his father and his mother. There's this idea that Jesus is speaking of, that a man is to care for his parents. And you were making a loophole mm-hmm. about it, saying, well, what I was going to use to take care of you, I'm giving that as a gift to God. Mm-hmm. And you were making this loophole around what they ought to be doing. Paul speaks about the widows and the caring of them. And she said, and he says, it's a responsibility for the family. But if any widow, 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 4, but if any widow have children or a nephew, let them first show piety at home and be requited with their parent, for this is good and acceptable before God. In other words, somebody else take care of this so the church doesn't, if she has the family can. And then we get down to verse 8, and a lot of times we use this speaking of husbands and different things of that nature, or fathers. But it says, but if any provide not for his own, especially those of his own household, he has denied the faith, and he is worse than an infidel. That's the idea of caring for the elderly or parent, widow. So honoring includes future care.
And there's so many principles. We could spend another day on that, I think, that's wrapped up in that as far as, you have been blessed, return that, personal responsibility, and even just the very idea, here is the very foundation of authority, where mm-hmm. you begin to see what it means to have instruction and respect to rules begins in that household. And many people's view, how they think about God, is formed early by the opinion they get of their parents. And so all of that, I think, can be seen in that instruction.
And, that is a great responsibility upon the parents, the idea of parents instructing, mm-hmm. fathers, you know, to instruct your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Mm-hmm. But the idea is, well, if we don't teach them to understand and respect the authority of the household, the father and the parents, mm-hmm. then they'll also, those will carry over into their respect of all authority.
Right.
Very well. Well, the sixth is in verse number 13. Verse number 13, dealing with life now.
You shall not murder.
All right. You know, here's the command. King James says, thou shalt not kill. And, you know, seems very broad, but the New King James gives us a better understanding. Murder. And that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a type of murder. Now, there are several types of murder. Now, there's actual murder that we understand. There's also manslaughter, you know, an unintentional murder. And these are dealt with in the scripture. You know, murder, he deals with it and the punishments of it and speaks of it in Numbers chapter 35, there in verses 16 to 18. But also, the manslaughter is addressed there in Numbers 35 as well, just after that in verses 16 to 21. And so he says, okay, here's murder and here's consequences. And then there may be the idea that it's manslaughter, it's negligent, but it's not, it wasn't intended murder. So here's the consequence for it. And so those are these things he's saying. He's not talking about the taking of human life in all instances. I mean, we can go all the way back again to the book of Genesis, there in Genesis chapter 9. He says that whosoever sheds man's blood by a man shall his blood be shed. You know, so he says there that if a man kills a man, the man's going to forfeit his life, and a man's going to have to end up taking his life. There's going to have to be an executioner. Why? Because God had created man in his own image. And so he's not dealing with that. And even, you know, even understanding, when we keep reading, there are going to be no less than eight capital punishment crimes that are going to be listed in the coming chapters. And even when we get over into the New Testament, you know, we look at things and look at passages that are seen there, and that is, he says in, Paul, when he's on his way to Rome in Acts 25, verse 11, he says, if I've done anything worthy to die, I do not object.
Right.
But he also, in Romans chapter 13 and verse 4, he says, he speaks of the government, and he says, he is a minister of God to you for good, but if you do that which is evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him who does evil. He says that they have the authority by God and are exercising that authority of God in that way. So he's not speaking about all taking of human life. He's talking about murder. He's talking about manslaughter in those ways. Because, again, there are several things that would allow one in just a little bit, capital punishment crimes, if we have time to get there, that we'll even note. But let's move on then. The seventh word, verse 14.
You shall not commit adultery.
Now he protects against that, the marriage, and dealing here, speaking of the adultery, dealing with that which is between man and woman who are married, and protecting that. But then there's also all the other sexual immoralities that will be addressed in the law as well. But here again, the penalty, this carries a death penalty with it. If you look over in Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 10, and the man that commits adultery with another man's wife, even he that commits adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall be put to death. It was a death penalty crime. But he deals with that. And the law also deals with other sexual deviations as well. And that's what they are. You know, they've gone beyond the prescribed realm of where God says the sexual desires are to be fulfilled. They are between the husband and the wife, and the husband and the wife only. And it carries a severe consequence. If we keep reading, we see that God deals in the book of Exodus here in just a little bit, in chapter 22, verse number 19, he's going to deal with bestiality And he says, whosoever lies with a beast shall be surely be put to death. He's going to deal with homosexuality in Leviticus 20 in verse number 13. If a man also lies with mankind as he lies with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination, and they shall surely be put to death, and their blood shall be upon them. He deals with incest in Leviticus 20 as well. You drop down past, you know, you deal right after the homosexuality, then he deals with bestiality, and then after that he deals with these incest of near relatives, and he deals with certain relatives that are there. In Deuteronomy, he deals with sexual assaults that take place, and different scenarios of sexual assault are given there in Deuteronomy chapter 22, and their consequences, and some death penalty consequences would take place. The Bible deals with the sexual immorality of prostitution in many places. And so here he is addressing the primary, and that is between husband and wife. But it's not limited to that. You know, he's dealing with adultery. You shall not commit adultery. The eighth word, verse number 15.
You shall not steal.
You are not going to be a thief. You're not going to steal. And the, you know, the idea of theft, Paul addresses that. Here's the here is the cure for thievery. Work. You know, let him who stole steal no more, but let him labor, working with his hands the things which is good, that he may give to him that needs it, that needeth. And so, you know, what do? A man who's a thief, teach him how to work. You know, change his mindset and do not steal. And he deals with that theft and the problem of it. We've been looking in the book of Genesis in class, and we see several times. You know, we saw it with Jacob when Laban came after him, accusing of theft, of the stealing of his idols. And he said, whoever you find him with, let him die. You know, this was something that was a grave crime against someone to take that which was theirs. And so then we even see the same thing with Benjamin having the silver cup. The other brothers, when they're accused that they have stolen this cup that belonged to the man in Egypt, which was Joseph, well, they said, let him die. Thou shalt not steal. You shall not steal. And then the ninth word is verse number 16.
You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor.
This generally, the idea of this is this speaking out in court or in a proceeding or giving a vow, you know, saying someone has said something and you know that it to be true, you know, false. You're testifying against someone. And we see that in Exodus chapter 23 in verse number 2. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. In other words, you're not going to give a false testimony to change the outcome and to pervert justice. But Paul would say in Colossians chapter 3 and verse number 9, lie not to one another. You know, speak truth. And here he says, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. Well, remember that man trying to justify himself in Luke chapter 10, and he said, who's my neighbor? And Jesus told the account of the Good Samaritan, and he says, you know, your neighbor is a lot broader term than you think. Mm-hmm. And so he showed that out. And then finally, the 10th word in verse number 17.
You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You shall not, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's.
Covet. Now, you know, we hear that word covet, covet desire. It's a desire is what it is. But here we're, and usually in the scripture, it is an inordinate desire. It is something that is wrong, an evil desire. And here he's talking about that evil desire, you know, something that is wrong. But Paul uses that term, 1 Corinthians chapter 12, before the great chapter 13, talking about this, but he says, but covet earnestly the best gifts. So the idea of covet is just this desire. But there are some good things we desire. I covet your prayers. Okay, that's okay. But the covetous that he's speaking about here is even the covetous that we read about in Colossians 3 and verse 5. Mortify, therefore, your members, which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, covetousness, which is idolatry. Mm-hmm. Okay, here is that desire for stuff and other people's stuff and more stuff. And the cure for covetousness is contentment. That's what Paul points out in 1 Timothy chapter 6. But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. Contentment overcomes covetous. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. And for the love of money is the root of all evil, while some coveted after have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And so the cure is contentment. He warns against the covetous nature of people in the final word. Well, if we keep on looking through, and we just quickly note a few things in the few minutes that we have left, you know, we go through the chapters following. We get these secondary laws that carry through chapter 23, verse 33. We have things that deal with the altar of God here in just a moment and in public worship. But we have God's laws that are going to provide protection in chapter 21. In chapter 21, verses 2 through 11, he deals with laws that protect the servants. In verses 12 to 14 of that chapter, he's going to have those that provide protection from killers. 15 to and 17 are going to deal with protecting the parent. 16 is going to deal with protecting from kidnappers, those who would steal people. Financial loss is addressed in verses 18 and 19. Slaves are addressed in verses 20, 21, 26, and 27. The women are afforded protection in verses 22 to 25. Laws pertaining to the animals, the care of animals, 28 to 32. From general negligence in 33 and 34, and property loss in 35 to 36. But there are also in that, you know, we mentioned it a moment ago. I said there's about eight of these laws that carried a death penalty with them, and here they are. And where they're found. They're found in chapter 21, verse 12. If a man is smiting or killing a man, in verse number 12. In verse number 15 of that same chapter, if that man is smiting his father or his mother, he's going to forfeit his life. The kidnapper, the man stealer, in verse number 16, stealing and selling a man. Verse 17, a man who's cursing his father or his mother. Verse 21, the man neglecting warnings about dangerous animals. You know, the man had a bad animal who had a habit of attacking and doing that harm. He's going to do it. You get into chapter 22, verse number 18, sorcery and witchcraft. Those guilty of it would pay the death. The bestiality in 22 and verse 19. And then sacrificing to other gods in verse number 20 of chapter 22. So, I mean, there's eight right there. So this idea of thou shalt not kill is not dealing with capital crimes. He addresses that. And so then we move on through, and at the end of it all, we have the sealing of the covenant that takes place in chapter 24. And God gets a group of people. There's this representative that would be there representing the children of Israel as a whole. Not everyone's allowed to be there, but there's this representative that takes place. And this consecration would take place with the sprinkling of the blood. And then at the end of the chapter, it tells us that Moses ascends to the mountain And he's there for 40 days and 40 nights. Moses fasted 40 days and 40 nights. And Joshua goes up the mountain with him in verse number 15. So just a few thoughts in the time that we had, focusing on mainly the law, those 10 words of protection that God gives, and the 10 commandments, the Decalogue there. But there's so many more that we can go through, but here at Mount Sinai in the encampment there.
That's one thing I was trying to type out here, just that idea that, remember, this that was a basis, and you see so much expansion.
Yeah.
And so many today maybe pick one verse or something out of the Bible, and that's not all that God has said on that subject or that matter, and we need to investigate the totality.
Well, you know, I like to think of it, you know, people want to grasp to the Ten Commandments, mm-hmm. and they want to have that part of the law. Well, what about the rest of it? You know, if you're under the old law is so much more than just the Ten Commandments. I mean, mm-hmm. you've had the animal sacrifice, you have the burnt offerings, you have the incense, you have the holy days. All of these things are incorporated with the law. The idea here, you know, of how to deal with livestock, how to deal with people, these are all parts of the law of Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And the law of Moses was fulfilled, and we are under the law of Christ, a better covenant with better promises today. Well, we are out of time today, but we're glad that you have been with us, and we hope that you will continue listening throughout the day. You'll be blessed with an opportunity here in a little while for the good news today with Jim Dearman, followed by Can't Speak Today, followed by Reflections Upon the Precious Book Divine with Rick Popejoy and the group there. And I know they always have a great show. So if you haven't been listening, tune in at 11:30 to that great show there. But remember, always tune in 9 a.m. Central Standard Time here for Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. We're going to keep going through the Old Testament, Lord willing. We'll make it through in 2017. Till next time, we hope that you have a great and a blessed day.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.